Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Hi, and welcome to the Cross-Border Catch-Up, the podcast for global employers who want to stay in the know about cutting-edge employment issues worldwide. My name is Patty Shapiro, and I'm here with my colleague, Eric Lee. We're cross-border attorneys here at Ogletree, and today we're going to talk about the recent legislative updates in Singapore, which may have some implications on employer handbooks or policies. Eric, can you kick us off?
Yes. Thank you, Patty. There are three major updates. The first update I want to go over is the change to the greater government-paid paternity leave benefits. Currently in Singapore, fathers of a newborn Singapore citizen are entitled to 2 weeks of paid paternity leave. The new law that has been in effect from January 1st, 2024 will extend that benefit for 2 additional weeks, up to a total of 4 weeks of paid paternity leave.
Got it. So right now, employers in Singapore need to provide 4 weeks of paternity leave to their employees?
No, actually, the new law does not require employers to provide the 2 additional weeks. It only gives them the option to provide the 2 weeks and later be reimbursed for those benefits. For now, employers may only opt to grant the additional 2 weeks on a voluntary basis. However, it is expected to become a requirement in the future.
Got it. So the employers that provide this leave, do they have to pay this amount directly to the employees? I thought I heard you say something about reimbursement.
Yes, the employers can pay for these benefits and later get it reimbursed through the government paid paternity leave benefits program.
It's interesting that it's a voluntary 2 additional weeks, because if I understand correctly, the way this process works in Singapore is that an individual that wants the paternity leave is paid by their employer, and then the employer is reimbursed by the government. So although even employers that choose to offer the 2 additional weeks, they're not actually incurring an additional cost because it's being reimbursed by the government. Is that right?
Right, that is correct.
So you mentioned that there are 3 changes. So that's the first one, right? What's the second change that's happening in Singapore?
The second change is the unpaid infant care leave. Currently, a working parent is entitled to 6 days per year of unpaid infant care leave after 3 months of continuous service with their current employer if they have a child under age 2 who is a Singapore citizen. From January 1st, 2024, this leave has been doubled to 12 days per year for each parent.
It sounds like there's a lot of increasing leaves for parents. That's great. What's the third change coming in Singapore this year?
The third and perhaps the most significant update is the introduction of the new workplace fairness legislation in Singapore. Singapore's first workplace fairness legislation, which is slated for passage in the second half of 2024, aims to enhance protection against discrimination and provide an avenue for employees to report grievances without fear of retaliation. The new law is designed to complement, not replace, the existing tripartite guidelines on fair employment practices.
Before we get too far into the weeds of the workplace fairness legislation, could you remind us what are the tripartite guidelines very generally?
Tripartite guidelines on fair employment practices is a set of guidelines published by the Tripartite Alliance. It sets out to establish best practices for employers in terms of anti-discrimination measures and fair employment practices with respect to recruitment and promotion and disciplines of disciplinary measures on employees.
So what does this new law require?
Yeah, before I go into the details of the new requirements, I should probably first mention that the new legislation exempts small firms with fewer than 25 employees from its obligations. So for employers that have significantly smaller headcount than 25 employees in Singapore, the new legislation will not have an immediate impact for them. However, the Singapore government has announced that they are going to review in 5 years whether they will expand the scope of application to employers with less than 25 employees. So many employers with smaller headcounts or those who are close to the 25 employee threshold have been keeping an eye on the developments. Now, on to the actual updates. The first notable change the new legislation will bring is that it will provide clarity on the definition of what discrimination is. The new law includes a definition of discrimination, which is described as an adverse employment decision based on the following protected characteristics of age, nationality, sex, marital status, pregnancy status, caregiving responsibilities, race, religion, language, and disability and mental health conditions.
Are any of these protected characteristics new?
No, actually, most of these characteristics are already protected under the tripartite guidelines on fair employment practices, either expressly or by implication. But what is meaningful about the new law is that, you know, it sets a clear definition of what discrimination is and who is protected. And what is also worth mentioning is that, you know, mental health has been specifically mentioned in the law, which would make Singapore one of the first countries to do so.
That's a great point. So the new legislation gives us a better definition of discrimination. What else does it require?
The next notable change is that the legislation requires employers to put in grievance handling processes, which must include the following processes. Number one, they must conduct inquiries. Number two, they must document the process. And number three, they must communicate the outcome to the aggrieved employee. There are also several key measures that must be included in the grievance process. First, employers must protect the confidentiality of the identity of persons who report workplace discrimination and harassment. Second, employers must prohibit retaliation against those who report cases of workplace discrimination or harassment.
That makes sense. If there's a requirement to inform employees anyway about the grievance procedure, it might as well be in a policy. What else does the new law say?
So another thing to note about the new law is that prima facie evidence should be provided by the claimant to support the claim that discrimination has in fact occurred. They can do this by clearly citing the incidents that led the employee to believe that he or she suffered an adverse employment outcome. And second, the cited incident should show how the consideration of the protected characteristic led to the adverse employment outcome.
That's interesting. So it actually puts the burden on the employee to prove their case, pretty much?
Right. I believe the intended effect of this requirement is to prevent any frivolous claims.
That makes sense. So once an employee has raised this claim and provided this evidence, what is an employer supposed to do under this new law?
The new law says that if the complaint cannot be resolved at the company level, employees may turn to the Tripartite Alliance for Fair and Progressive Employment Practices for mediation procedure. Compulsory mediation will be required for workplace discrimination claims at the Tripartite Alliance of Dispute Management first, and with the adjudication at the Employment Claims Tribunal as a last resort.
Is either the mediation or like the order that they have to adjudicate the issue new compared to what existed before this new law?
Well, I think the mediation is like a new thing that they're really trying to push under the new legislation. They don't want this to like go to court. They want this to be resolved first at the company level through this grievance procedure. And if that doesn't work, they want to place it on a compulsory mediation procedure. So, you know, it doesn't end up as like a claim in court. I'm not sure whether the guideline has already recommended in the past that employers must first undergo a compulsory mediation procedure. However, the significance of the new law is that it is making this requirement to undergo compulsory mediation a legal requirement.
Is there anything else that the new law tells employers?
Yeah, I guess the one last point to highlight is that the workplace fairness legislation does not just cover requirements for existing employees, but it is intended to cover all stages of employment, from recruiting, promotion, and performance evaluation, all the way to dismissal. So also, because most of discrimination violations occur at the stage of recruiting process, there is a big emphasis in the law that, you know, prospective employers are prohibited from using words or phrases that refer to a protected characteristic or prefer a protected characteristic in job advertisements. However, with this regard, you know, one thing to note is that the requirement does not apply if the protected characteristics form genuine and reasonable occupational requirements. For example, for a job advertisement for language teachers who should be proficient in the language that they are teaching, the employer can state language proficiency as a job requirement in advertisements.
That sounds like a lot like the US's bona fide occupational requirement.
Yes, that is correct.
It's interesting that Singapore has codified a lot of the discrimination laws that I think we're used to seeing in many countries. And although it is progressive on that protected characteristic point you made earlier, it is a little bit behind the times that it's only now introducing this legislation, right?
Right, especially considering that it is a very diverse workforce in Singapore.
True.
There's a lot of different nationalities. It is an international hub. So, I mean, you would expect that they would already have some sort of codified law about anti-discrimination measures. But yeah, I mean, they did have the guidelines. But yeah, this would be the first legislation that is going to be put in place. So, which I agree, it is a little late.
Well, better late than never.
Right.
Well, thanks, Eric. I appreciate you going over this new law with us today and the developments in Singapore. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Thank you all for joining us for today's cross-border catch-up. Follow us to stay in the know about cutting-edge employment issues worldwide.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.